Tanse, hello everyone. My name is Cheryl Drever. I am a daughter, mother, grandmother, auntie, artist, and a member of the Mistawasis Nehewa Cree Nation in Treaty 6 territory. I live and work in Treaty 1 territory and currently serve as the Anti-Racism Project Lead with the First Nations Health and Social Secretariat of Manitoba. Welcome to Rooted and Rising.
Hi, my name is Carla Cochran. I am from Fish River Cree Nation and also have roots in Saging First Nation. I'm Anishinaabe and Cree. I am a mother as well, not yet a grandmother. And I also work at the First Nations Health and Social Secretariat of Manitoba.
Thank you, Carla. Welcome to Rooted and Rising, Anti-Indigenous Racism Training in Action. This podcast was created because we know learning about anti-Indigenous racism training doesn't end when training is over. The real question is, what happens next? What changes? What do people carry forward? How do reflection, discomfort, and learning become action? That's what this space is about, because anti-Indigenous racism training isn't only about increasing awareness, it's about transforming relationships, interrupting racism, strengthening accountability, and changing systems that continue to impact First Nations people seeking healthcare and participating in research.
So to understand this work, we need to go back to where it began. So the Anti-Indigenous Racism Training was developed through partnership connected to the CIHR, Canadian Institute of Health Research Strategy for Patient-Oriented Research Diabetes Project. And it recognized that racism within healthcare systems directly impacts Indigenous peoples through experiences, access to care, trust in health outcomes. And this training emerged because Indigenous patients, families, and communities have long spoken about experiences of racism, the stereotyping they were facing, dismissal, and harm in healthcare systems. Too often, those experiences were minimized, and Indigenous voices carried the burden of proving racism exists. So this training was created to challenge that silence, to create space for difficult conversations, to ask participants to examine, you know, colonization, power, privilege, bias, systems, and their own roles within them, not through blame, but through reflection, accountability, and action. So over time, this work has grown, and what began as training has become conversations, partnerships, you know, curriculum development, conference presentations, research collaborations, and communities of people committed to doing better.
Thank you. Before we continue, we want to honor someone whose vision helped make this work possible, Dr. Barry LaVallee. Dr. Barry LaVallee was more than a physician and a leader. He was someone who believed deeply in First Nations-led solutions, First Nations knowledge, and challenging systems that were harming our people. His advocacy challenged institutions to move beyond words towards action. His leadership helped create opportunities for conversation that many systems were not ready to have. His work continues through the people carrying these teachings forward. We acknowledge that much of what exists today within the anti-Indigenous racism training grew because leaders like Dr. Barry LaVallee believed that this work mattered. We honor his legacy with gratitude and commitment to continuing the work with humility, courage, and accountability. Miigwech, Dr. Barry LaVallee.
So this podcast is called Rooted and Rising, the Anti-Indigenous Racism in Action. It's about what happens when people move beyond learning about racism and when they actually start to begin to respond to it. So through the training, we see people reflect, unlearn, and you know, sometimes they might feel uncomfortable, but more importantly, we also see change because transformation stories matter, data matters, training evaluations also matter. Stories help us to understand what change feels like. So in this podcast, we'll hear from healthcare providers, researchers, staff, trainees, facilitators, and also participants who have experienced the training themselves. So what Rooted and Rising means is that Rooted is about truth. It's about where we come from, what we were taught, and what we carry. And then the rising part is about what we do next. You know, that action, the accountability, and showing up differently in our work and in our relationships.
So in this podcast, you'll hear from people who've taken the training, healthcare providers, researchers, and staff, and talking honestly about what they've learned and how it's changed them. Not perfectly, not all at once, but in real, meaningful ways. So some of the questions that we are going to be asking over the next few weeks are about Rooted, the shift, the rising, and the impact. And I'm going to start with asking these questions between me and Carla. Carla is one of the facilitators of the training. She's actually been one of the facilitators when the training started back in 2021. The training was developed in 2016 to 2020. And it took that long to really work on the curriculum and the training expectations and to gather all the staff to really focus on getting the training up and running. And Carla was there since the beginning, and I'm really interested in learning more about her experiences. So we're going to start in some questions under Rooted. So Carla, what messages about First Nations people did you hear about growing up?
You know, it's really, when I reflect back, I think about the time that I grew up on reserve and made that shift to the city. And it was like night and day. Because when you're back home in community, you don't notice a difference. But when you come to the city, I was surprised that I wasn't surrounded by a lot of, I guess, in the school that I was going to, First Nations people in the school particularly. But, you know, growing up, I've experienced many different racism that was directed towards either towards myself, family member. And, you know, some of the things that you hear, the stereotypes, of course, like the drunk Indian, some other stuff that you hear about is like how we're living off government and just really the negative. And what really surprised me is that a lot of children had these views growing up. And I think, you know, when I reflect now back to my kids, I always tell them that they've have to learn it somewhere. So, you know, those young ones that were saying that back when I was young had to have learned it from in their families, at home, just around. And also, I would say also representation. You didn't see that much representation of First Nations people in media, like how you do today. It's a big difference. So now you see more positive, but before it was a lot of the negative and the stories. And I think somehow I've kind of, when I was younger, I used to question myself and used to internalize it. Like, why do I feel like this? Now when I'm older and I reflect back, I could see the reason why. You know, I felt that way.
Interesting. I also felt like a lot of racism and that internalized oppression of my own self-worth growing up and how that I carried that into my adult life and going to school. And, you know, it took many, many years to learn about the impacts of colonization has had on everyone. And I'm talking about not just Indigenous people here in Canada, but the people who perpetuate the harm, it's also harmed them as well. So that's some of the discussions that we have in the training. But I'm also interested, and this is a rooted question, what is your understanding of racism in healthcare before the training?
So before the training, I would say just my own experiences and family experiences. And for myself, as I mentioned before, like having those experiences, even growing as an adult, growing up like through childhood, teenager to a young adult. So just going back to the question about the understanding of racism, and it was all personal. So it was my own personal experiences in the healthcare system and also my family. And, you know, it's kind of shaped how I viewed it. But taking the training, I would say I heard more people with their experiences and like especially being immersed in it and reading, not only reading about it, but on social media, people share a lot. And I can't believe how much experiences people have of racism in healthcare settings. It's like social media, people post and they share about it. And just to warn people of incidences that happened at such and such a place that, you know, that to be aware, that's what I, like I said, my own personal experiences. Yeah. What about yourself?
I always understood that racism was prevalent and real in healthcare. Even personally for myself as a mom going to receive healthcare and even going in to have my babies. I remember particularly my last one. He was born in 2015 at the height of birth alerts. And, you know, for any reason, they could just take your baby away. And at that time, there was no reason for my baby to be taken away, but that fear was there. And I had a C-section and I went in, had my baby, and the nurses kept coming in to ask, like, do you need help? Do you need help? And I adamantly refused. I was like, no, it's okay. I got this. It's okay. I even forced my family to come and see me at the hospital so they can see that I have support, but I didn't sleep for the whole time that I was in the hospital because of fear that they were going to perceive my accepting their help as me being incapable of parenting my own little baby. So I didn't feel rested until I came home. Another incident shortly after was when they have the nurses come to your house. And I was like, this nurse kept asking me so much questions. And she was not from Canada. She was a Black lady. And she had a really heavy accent. And she kept asking me about where my partner was, if I was married, what my income was. And I was really upset. Like, she came in, weighed my baby, but I felt like it was more of a monitoring, like a surveillance. But my house was nice and clean, and I had all the things to look after my baby. I didn't have any social services come and visit me after that. But at that time, that's when a lot of babies were being apprehended back in 2015.
Yeah. I was going to say similar experience too as well with childcare or with birthing my child. Going afterwards to go get blood work. Mm. It was what had happened was I showed up. I went to the appointment. Then they started asking me questions about who, like if being a single mom, about if I was single or not, and if I had a partner. But at the same time, they started asking me about all these different questions that weren't connected to the blood work. And then the question that they did ask was about support. Do you have supports at home? And then right there, I was like, hey, that's a red flag. I stopped them and I said, you know what? I know what you're doing. I actually pointed it out. I said, I just want to let you know I'm probably one of the most supported people that you would meet through family and community and having just people there for me. And then the second thing was the nurse that came to the home as well. And I found that people changed their tune once they knew like the type of work that I did, or if they, because I didn't talk for the most, like I didn't want, like it was just interactions. But once I started talking a little bit more, I found that their tune changed. So I mean, like those there, people might not realize that the questions that they ask might not even be connected. You know, it's they're doing a screening.
They're doing a screening, but it comes from like it's a form of microaggression, making those assumptions and those biases, and what they were taught about like Indigenous women as needing help or being not being able to like look after themselves. And we talk about this in the training, like And as part of the training, we have people read academic articles, scholarly work, and, you know, get them to do a lot of reflection. And in that reflection, we also ask people to send in two questions about their reflection piece on the articles that we read. So one of the articles that we read is, you know, it's about parenting and it's about mothering, but also rooted in colonization. There's a paper about Burnett and Hayes, and they talk about child tax benefit and the origin of child tax benefit and how like the government really promoted First Nations women to formula feed their babies over breastfeeding. And that was really harmful because we did not have safe drinking water. And because the water was not safe to drink, what do you need to like make that formula? You need water. And so a lot of our babies were harmed because they suffered dehydration because of the water. And that's horrible. But, and sorry, I'm going off topic here, but these are just some of the things that are rooted in the amount of racism that's received in healthcare, right from birth, right to the tomb. You know, like it's there and it's real. And so we ask these questions and we have these questions as part of our training. And yeah, what do you think, Carla?
Yeah, just with the shift in the training and the challenges is calling it out or knowing it is happening. What I hear from sometimes like younger relatives are just, I hear stories. Sometimes people don't realize the incidences that they are in or the situation that they're in, that there's racial undertones to it. So, I mean, like the one thing that I would say is with the training, it to actually call it out in a good way, you know, not to stand by and watch it happen, but to note it and to sometimes ask the question, like, what do you mean by that? You know, if you hear something that does have that racial undertone, and then people kind of shift a little bit different when they, like, in situations, because then they're like, okay, and then they have to explain it, and it's like they kind of get flustered over what they're going to say and what the reasoning behind of what they said.
I think, like, in some care facilities. I'll give an example. My daughter, she had her baby about 6 months ago and we went to the hospital. And at the intake, she's in labor. She's going to have a baby. But at the intake, the lady asked her about her partner and if she was safe. And I get that. But that's not even where, why, you know, like she's going to the hospital to have her baby, like yeah. And take her health information. And, you know, if that comes up, I don't know. I didn't get it. Like, it just felt like really like you're First Nations, you're in a domestic violent relationship. And I'm her mom and I'm sitting there with her and I'm like, why are they even?
Well, that would be my question to them is I would probably say, is this a question that you ask everybody that comes here that's in labor? Oh, well, that's yes.
No, not at all. Because like I was also there to see like a Filipina lady, you know, her intake, they didn't ask her about her partner because her partner was there with her.
Yes.
But is she safe just because she's there with him?
Yeah.
But like because my daughter was there without her partner and he eventually came, by the way. But like, I don't get it. Yeah, it's horrible. But I think in that shift, I've delivered the training, I'd say 4 times already. I have learned so much in those 4 trainings than I have anywhere else. And I really, 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 really hope and pray that like we need to know more about our rights when we're entering those spaces and just be like, I don't think that's an appropriate question. Like, why? How is this relevant to my healthcare right now? Yeah.
No, and I mean, like, you know, I think, because I know one of the questions that we will ask people is about, did anything make you uncomfortable or shift your thinking? And I think because we're so rooted in it, I don't think there's anything that's made a change in the way I think, but it's just being aware more, I think having more confidence to speak up in a good way.
Definitely. I really feel much more comfortable engaging in those questions.
Yes.
And being curious and be like, I don't understand why you would ask me that or where is that coming from?
Yeah.
But I wish more people had that confidence, and maybe taking this training is building that confidence, like the accessibility to training, to build up that confidence, to build up your knowledge, to advocate for yourself in healthcare settings is really important. But I feel like the training is geared more towards healthcare providers for them to reflect on themselves and the way that they see us and begin to see us as human and as worthy of care. So that's where we're coming from. But me and you have like this whole other dynamic about anti-racism training and the impacts it had on us.
Yes.
But throughout the interviews that we'll have with people who have taken the training, their perspective is going to be so much different because they're non-Indigenous people working in healthcare. And what shift have they experienced in themselves in providing care to First Nations people? So I think that would be really interesting.
Yeah. You know, and just thinking about that, I was once asked the question about what do you want people to know when it comes to like, just in general, when it comes to like working with First Nations people. And the thing that I said is, well, not even with First Nations people, the base was about racism. And I said, I just want people to know that we're human too. That's what it boils down to, because I think for some reason we're dehumanized and thought less than. So when it comes to serious situations, sometimes when you add First Nations in it, like a First Nations woman, First Nation, whatever, First Nations person, then it kind of somehow in public dehumanizes the whole experience. And I hope with this training that people who take it that are non-First Nations have that courage to stand up and to say something if they see something wrong. But even in this situation, it could be with other colleagues, or even if they see something, recognize it themselves, if they see them on their own path and they might not be thinking something that's good, but then somehow through the training, you know, it made them realize, you know, just that shift, I think, makes a huge difference.
Awesome segue, because in The Rising, we ask, what are you doing differently now in your role? You know, in after taking the training, what are you doing differently now? And also, how have you responded differently in situations since the training? So I'll ask you that.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, I've been very lucky because, I mean, like I said, personal experiences, I've kind of shifted the way I used to respond to things that had happened. And so, like, you know, a younger me would be upset And I would like not say anything. I would like perhaps maybe go home and cry. All right, I get up, you know, and then as I got older me would start to get mad and I would stand up, but I wouldn't say things in a good way. Now I'm at a point where I listen, I hear, then I'll ask questions, but I'm not afraid of saying something. You know, I'll go in and I'll say, oh, you know, and I'll like example, and this is not with healthcare, but it's in a store. I did see something happening with younger people from one of our Northern First Nations, because I did chat with them before we went in, and they happened to be shopping, came out, and I seen as soon as they came in on the speaker or on the speaker on the mics that there or the walkie talkies that they had, they pointed out that there was a couple of people that came in and to go and follow them around or to watch them. And I actually heard it and I didn't say anything there because I was so upset. Because I was like, they paid how much money to come out of from their First Nations community from up north, which is a lot. And they're here shopping and they're legit shopping and then going, you know, like going back home to take whatever they buy. And I actually called because I went and I was outside with my daughter. And then, like I say, whenever I do stuff with this, in usually I have my children around me. And so I called them and I asked them. And the whole thing was they actually told me that most people who steal from their store are First Nations. And that's why they did that. And I was like, well, you're walking a line that's like racial profiling. Like, okay. You know, so that was actually the manager I was talking to of that store, but gave her some strong words in a good way that, you know, that shouldn't be happening and that's not right. Like that's they shouldn't be doing that. That's racial profiling, called them out on it, etc. One thing I will say though is like I always have conversations with my children. So if something does happen and it comes up, I'll explain afterwards the situation and why I responded the way I do, because I want them to be able to speak up. Mm-hmm. And I want them to be able to use their voice if they see something happen that's not right. So, you know, and it, like I said, it's been a journey and this training just kind of solidifies that. But at the same time, gives me the opportunity to share with others who are taking the training that there's a way to do things. There's a way to react in a good way. I always say good way. What I mean that, I mean not getting angry and upset, but to actually calling it out, like saying, hey, you know what, that sounds racist right now. Or even just saying, hey, you know, I don't feel comfortable with what you're saying, however way.
Yeah. And that silence is violence. And silence is a really easy way to, like, you know, take yourself out of the situation. Mm-hmm. But like when you have some power and privilege, it's okay to, like, you know, put yourself out there, you know, to protect other people. I understand, like, you know, don't put yourself in a violent situation, but, you know, like when you can, and you see something happening right in front of you, you know, put yourself out there and just say, you know what, I'm not okay with this. This isn't okay. And mm-hmm. we need to like take a step back for a moment. And even if that isn't going in the right way, at least check in with the people, check in with the family. You know, like I saw what happened to you and I'm so sorry that happened to you. I just want to check in with you to see how you're doing. And if there's anything I can do for you, something, can I get you a coffee? Do you need a hug? You know, mm-hmm. something. But silence and walking away is just, you know, not okay. We need to do better and be better at being protectors and looking after our relatives, all of our relatives. So much to talk about. Like, I was just thinking, like, what are things that I do differently since I've taken the training? Like, I know that it's had an impact on my friends and family. For my son, he has a better understanding of colonization, whereas I didn't really have an understanding of colonization until I went to university. Like, that wasn't even a word that I was taught, like, in, you know, formal education.
Yeah.
But, like, and it still takes some time to understand about colonization. Our words are colonized. Our thoughts are colonized. This mouse is colonized. Our phone is colonized. But there's, in that colonization, there is systems in place that uphold that colonization. And it's through white supremacy and whiteness. And how do we have those hard conversations and not have people feel so uptight and feel like they're being personally attacked when we're talking about whiteness? Or how have I responded differently since taking that training is that I feel 100% way more empowered to have these hard conversations. And like in the impact Why do you think this training matters in your experience?
Yeah.
I think the keyword that you said is the changing the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I think people who have taken the training, from what I've heard and what I've seen, is that they feel more comfortable now. And some of the systems that were set up, they actually realize, like, the nutrition, like, why we have the Canada Food Guide and how it came to be. You know, a lot of those things are not taught. And I think with the articles that they're given is that they're made to be aware of how things were set up and how things are designed. The example that I'll use is, like, personal care homes, especially when they're in a First Nations community. You might have elders or people who are receiving care there, and you'd want them to have, like, a cultural-based diet, like deer or moose meat. But whatever setup systems in place is, they're not able to have access to cultural food. And right there, that kind of, you know, you think about the diets before and the healthiness of the diets before, and like, why wouldn't that be allowed? So there's a lot of different things that we might not question that we just take that happen. And, you know, the example that I'll give is, and I was just thinking about this because, you know, we talked about children and I never really put so much thought into this. But when you think about Band-Aids, just recently they've started designing Band-Aids for different skin colors.
Yeah.
But when you think about the Band-Aid that you would get, it was often like a lighter brown Band-Aid. But now they've come out with different colors for Band-Aids to match skin tones, which is amazing because we don't all have the same skin tone.
I want to say, like, talking about Band-Aids,
yes.
There's an activity that everyone could go and read. You can go and look up Peggy McIntosh, and she talks about unpacking the invisible knapsack. And within that invisible knapsack comes power and privilege and things that you really don't have to think about if you're walking around in your everyday life as a non-Indigenous person. And Band-Aids is one of those questions. Like, you don't have to think about the kind of Band-Aids that you're going to get.
Right.
Yeah, that's one of them. And we've actually used that as an exercise in our training, like to stand up if you can identify with. And that was a really powerful exercise for people to see. And like, it was clearly evident that like the non-Indigenous people like could identify with those privileges as standing up. And like the Indigenous people were just like still sitting. You know, like stand up if.
Yeah.
So stand up if you've, let me see, like about housing. There's one about housing, like stand up if you've never had to dress up to go to the doctor.
Yeah.
I feel like I dress up every time I go to the doctor. And I feel like I have to have, you know, my ducks in a row, like go in really prepared to go to the doctor. Like I'm just worried about being judged.
I could agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even going to the store, making sure I look. It still happens though, but
going to the store. Yeah. Like I worry about when I go to the store, I do dress up. Okay. It's the truth. Sorry, guys. It's the truth. But at the times when I have not dressed up, let's say I'm running to the store to go to Dollarama and maybe I'm just, you know, wearing my pajamas and I am followed every single time. Shoppers Drug Mart is the worst.
I still get followed, even if I dress up. I think it might be the high cheekbones.
Yeah.
But I think I get, and the amazing thing is that when I take my child to the store, they'll notice if we have someone following us and they'll say, Mom, look, there's a floor walker. They know. And that's just being more aware. I think that's kind of the shift. When we talked about like the shift and the impact is that I'm trying to create that awareness so that I talked about the voice, giving my children the voice to be able to speak up in a good, like in a good way, but also being able to recognize little microaggressions or being able to recognize situations where they're in that might, you know, that they might be experiencing.
Encoded language.
Yes.
Like Northern person. That's a coded language. Or you're so articulate.
So what I would say is like for someone who hasn't taken the training yet, I would encourage if you have an opportunity to take some kind of training, if not this specific one, the anti-Indigenous racism training, which I would encourage you to take. But if there's other opportunities to take training that talk about like this topic, yeah. I would say very important. It's just kind of a new, it's like, you know, when you add knowledge and tools to your bundle, that's what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I mean, if it's not for work life, it could be for personal life as well.
100%. I'm all about like all training is good training. Like, you just can't, like, not take a training. Like, if you have an opportunity to take some anti-racism training, even if it's not First Nation specific or Indigenous specific, take the training. There's lots of resources and videos that you can watch online to start developing those practices, start developing those teachings. The framework's set up a little bit differently than other trainings. So I'll just share a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Our training is typically 8 to 10 weeks. We have an opening and a closing, and at the opening and closing, it's in person. We meet for about 3 hours to do introductions and talk about the format of the training, and yeah, we'll do some activities together to get to know each other, and we'll do that in ceremony, and we'll have some food together. And then the following week, we'll start our online training. So before they leave that orientation, we'll send them off with an academic article or a media to watch, and we'll get them to send in 2 questions before the next week. The 2 questions are sent to our facilitators, myself and Carla, and we have a whole team of facilitators from all sorts of backgrounds, and we'll look at those questions that are sent in. The questions are set up to facilitate next week's conversation. So when we meet together, we will ask their questions back to them so we can have discussion about their questions. And it's always really interesting to be in circle with those questions, because people are really thinking, and you could see those aha moments that happen, like where a light comes on because they've never really thought about something in a different way. So that will happen for like 8 to 10 weeks, and our last session is in person, and again, it's a closing and it's in ceremony and there's food. But I would say the longevity of the training is much more powerful and impactful over a period of time, as opposed to having a training that's a half-day session, one and done, check a box, and you're on your way to being an anti-racist. Our training is a longer period, and you get to sit with our staff and each other in circles. So we really have a lot of time to get to know each other and build those relationships. And I believe that those relationships are key in the training and key in building those partnerships and working with each other in a good way, and always being that person that people can come back and ground with. You know, like, you know what, something really horrible happened to me and I just really wanted to talk to someone about it. And that's happened a couple times while I've been in this position, while people have taken the training, because it becomes a safe space. But also building a community or practice has also been really powerful.
And I find like the people who have taken the training, because they're colleagues, they're able to chat with each other, connect with each other. But I think one of the key strengths is the facilitators, because as you mentioned, we come from different backgrounds and different perspectives. And I think that adds to the training, because, you know, many of our facilitators are First Nations, and they add that perspective, that personal touch, but as well as their own experience sometimes when talking about it, just providing different insight that might not have come up in the articles that were shared, you know, that historical stuff, or even connected to community, knowing what's happening in community, because it gives a bigger context. Because in some of these cases, the people who are taking the training are doing sometimes work placements that might connect to a First Nations community, or they might be in a First Nations community, and it gives them an opportunity to ask questions that might come up, you know, when they're in their, if they are in their work placement at that time.
Mm-hmm. So with our trainees, we have about 20 staff who volunteer completely off the side of their desk to co-facilitate the training. And, you know, they're from social workers to epidemiologists to data sovereignty staff, research staff. I could always appreciate when I'm in this space with my co-facilitators from racialized backgrounds that are first generation settlers, and like, their experience is pretty similar to our experiences too. And like, they share a perspective when it comes to like food and food sovereignty and like the harms of food and that impact and even the colonization of food. So we have a lot of those really shared commonalities. And I think that also happens with our trainees who've taken the trainees that are not white who will share their perspectives too about food. And I think it's amazing. I think it's fascinating. And I also learn a lot from the people who take the training. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, wow, yeah, I've never thought about it that way before. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's almost going to bring us to a closing here. This Rooted and Rising Anti-Indigenous Racism Training in Action, a space for reflection, a space for accountability, a space for stories about what happens after learning begins. Because anti-Indigenous racism training isn't about having the right words. It's about building the confidence to respond with care instead of silence. It's about building the courage to respond differently, to move from reflection to action. Miigwech, for being here.